dad's here, and my dad's a very nostalgic person. He tells a lot of stories, especially from the 1960s, and he's a really good storyteller. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy this. We're just going to tell a whole bunch of just totally random stories. There's not going to be any structure or order to this. We're just kind of just laid back, sitting down, reminiscing. I'm probably just going to remember as many stories as I can and get my dad to tell them. So, all right, Dad, are you ready?
I guess so.
All right, so I was just thinking about the story the other day. Tell the story about the time that you were coming out of Taco Bell and the police. What tell that, you know the one I'm talking about. Tell
Okay.
that story.
Well, back then, the teenage days in the 60s, if you were driving around late at night or whatever, any excuse, the cops would pull you over. And so you start getting paranoid, you know, like the song, Paranoia Strikes Deep Into Your Life, It Will Creep. Anyway, so one day, in the middle of the day, I'm sitting in my sister's little Toyota Corolla in front of Taco Bell. I got some tacos and such and eating this stuff. And I see these cops across the street in a parking lot of a shopping center. And I'm like, well, man, I start to get paranoid and I think, no, there's nothing they can do to me. I'm sitting in front of Taco Bell eating some food. I'm not doing anything wrong. There's nothing they can do to me. All of a sudden, they get in their cars and they drive across the street where I am. They jerk me out of the car, throw me up against the wall. What are you doing? Shut up! And wouldn't let you talk, and they're just rousting me. And finally, they go, "Oh, we're sorry. We saw those coats in the back window of your car, and I thought you burglarized a house nearby."
But they were just like throwing you against the
Oh,
side of the
yeah.
car and
Wouldn't let me
screaming for you to
talk.
shut
Shut
up.
up, you know.
Oh, yeah. And then we were talking about the other day, too, about how back then the laws against marijuana were really strict.
Yeah.
Didn't you say that they, and obviously you weren't smoking marijuana, but
Right.
didn't you say that they were, that they would actually like comb people's cars with a comb?
Yeah, you'd be hanging out at a park or something with some friends, and they'd come through there and they'd try to get you on something, anything. And so they would actually take a comb through the carpet of your car, and they'd say, "If we find one seed, you're going to jail," you know. But
Yeah, it was like a 2-year sentence or something.
Yeah. Friend of mine, the casual friend that I knew, he got busted with like $10 worth of pot in his car, and he spent a couple of years in jail.
Wow.
You know, they
That's
didn't
crazy.
just write you a ticket or say that's okay.
So do you have any other like driving stories or police stories or that aren't,
Like Highway Patrol or
I don't know, just anything.
huh?
Just whatever's a good story.
Oh man.
What about the time that you hit the guy and it just completely destroyed the side of his car and he just jumped
Oh,
out and tell
okay.
that story.
Yeah, I was very lucky when I was about 17. I didn't have any insurance or anything, and I was at a friend's house in a residential neighborhood, and I got ready to leave, and I pulled out, and I little sports car is coming right by me, and I hit the side of his car and just ripped the whole side of his car, you know. And then he pulls in front of me and stops. And then he gets out and I get out and he meets me at the back of his car, the front of my car. And then he's like, "Well, my car's all right. How's yours?" And I go, "Mine's fine." And he drove off. Imagine, I couldn't imagine why. Was he drunk? Was he Didn't know it.
Well, he must have been on the run or something,
Or,
right? Do you think
in
maybe
a
he just wanted,
stolen car, who
yeah, he just
knows?
wanted to get out of there because his
Right.
car was just completely smashed on one side, and he's just
Yeah,
like, "My car's
completely.
fine."
Yeah. So
That's
that was a
weird.
weird one.
Man.
Let me see what else.
So
Here's what
let's think
fast one
about some
does.
other funny stories from that era. What about what was that one that I was just thinking? I just had one on the tip of my tongue. Well, do you want to tell any stories from boot camp or anything? What was it like going to boot camp back then? Because
Oh yeah.
you enlisted Vietnam era.
In the
Didn't
Seabees.
you know you were going to get drafted?
Yeah, there was a lottery thing, and I looked at the number, and it looked like, okay, you're gonna get drafted. Well, I always wanted to be in the Seabees because when I was a kid, next door neighbor was a CB and would give me sailor hats and the big bumblebee patches to put on my jacket, mm-hmm. such like that. So I ended up going into Gulfport, Mississippi to a special boot camp because I had electrical experience. Mm-hmm. So I went in as like an E5, and the boot camp was just kind of a hilarious thing. I mean, it's a company commander, big, rough, tough guy, raging Cajun from New Orleans, you know. But when somebody would get caught doing something, I mean, you're standing at attention, somebody would scratch their ear, whatever. They'd have to stand in front of the whole group, scratch their ear, and go, "Sir, I will not scratch my ear, sir. Sir, I will not scratch
while
my ear,
while they're doing
sir.
It.
Yeah, while they're scratching
their ear. They're standing there scratching their ears, yeah, saying that.
Yeah. Right. So it just, it would go on and on, like whatever they were doing. And some things probably don't want to mention here.
Yeah, but sometimes they'd be scratching something else, and they'd have to say, "I will not scratch my whatever, sir."
Yeah, right. Exactly.
While they're scratching it.
Right.
So it didn't, and then didn't you? You had to like inject yourself with something, or
there was about 30 of us in our company, and one of the things was if you got hit with nerve gas in Vietnam, you had to give yourself the antidote within 20 seconds or something. Mm-hmm. So everybody had to go to this classroom, and you'd walk up to the front, you'd put your foot up on this little pulpit like type thing. And they give you this shot, and it was like a needle with a little thing of saline solution, just a little.
It's like a placebo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you'd have to shove, the needle was about an inch and a half long, you'd have to shove that thing into your leg, like through your pants, and then squeeze that stuff in, and then pull the needle out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't really that big of a deal to me, because the way they explained it was, it's like sticking a needle into an orange or something. You'd feel it prick the skin, but then that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the funny thing was, one of the tough guys in boot camp, boxer, professional boxer and all this stuff, he was the only one that wouldn't do it. You know, he just couldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. So they finally dismissed the whole class, and he was still there, and nobody knows if he ever did it.
But didn't you say he'd already flunked once?
That was another guy.
Oh, it was a different guy. Okay. Yeah. Because if you mess up, they put you back 2 weeks.
They put you back 2 weeks to the company before you.
Yeah.
And so you always had that fear that they're going to catch you in something, or you're going to do something, not answer a question right. So you had that fear. And one guy had been set back 4 or 5 times.
Oh, wow.
You know. And I thought later maybe it was just he didn't want to go to Vietnam. So if he never gets out of boot camp, he's not going to Vietnam, you know.
Yeah, but isn't boot camp, like, worse than Vietnam?
I would think so, except you're probably not going to get killed.
You're not going to die, but it's still going to be bad. So, and then didn't you guys also, when you were in boot camp, you had to, like, be exposed to tear gas?
Oh,
take
a
big breath, or they made you sing or talk or something?
Yeah, you'd put the mask on, and you'd walk into this little cabin that was full of tear gas and vomiting gas. And so you'd walk around in there with your mask on, and you felt fine, you know?
Yeah.
Well, then they'd tell you to pull the mask off. So you'd pull the mask off, and then the company commander would start asking you questions to get you to take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd breathe it in, so not only were your eyes burning, your face was burning, because you had to shave so close every day, your face was already raw.
Right, yeah.
You know? And so your face is on fire, you're throwing up and running out of the building. You know, it's quite an experience.
So I know that some of when you got to Vietnam is highly classified.
Right.
But let's talk about the part that's not classified. When you got to Vietnam, what was your job like when you got there?
I first get to Da Nang, and I'm standing there, and some commander comes up and says, "Well, you're tall. We're going to make you shore patrol." So I'm like, okay, you know. So they had these huge semi-trucks that were all gutted out with seats in them to haul. I say the drunks, but some people don't like you saying that. But all these drunk people, they'd haul them into downtown Da Nang to get drunk, and then they'd bring them back. Well, they didn't want them walking through the jungle down the road to the bars through the jungle, so we'd haul them on this truck. So on the side of the truck, it was like entering a bus. You had the steps and the pole and a light over your head.
Yeah.
And so my job was to stand in that doorway and keep the drunks from falling out, you know, and they're all harassing you. Hey, Shore Patrol, you know. But you're just thinking, it's too dangerous for them to walk down this road, but it's okay because of snipers and such. But it's okay for me to drive through the jungle with a light over my head.
With a spotlight, like, hey, spotlight, look at me, right, I'm a target. Head.
So that was quite an experience, and I did that two or three different nights.
So it's kind of scary just being under that light. So what about when you showed up, though, to do the electrical work? Because you were in the construction battalion, CBs, and you're doing electrical. So how'd the electrical work go?
Well, all the time before I got to Vietnam, all the chief petty officers and such that love to harass you, Anderson, you're going to be working 16 hours a day. You know, wait till you get to Vietnam, you know. So I had that to think about. And before that, you had to go through prisoner of war training, which was like, Anderson, wait till you get to that prisoner of war training. It was in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Well, that turned out to be nothing because they stamped some priority 13 on my orders, which meant I only had to go to the classrooms. I didn't have to go up in the mountains and get captured. And
oh, so you skipped where they torture you and
stuff. Where they take you up in the mountains and put you in a cage and all that. So skip that. So I get to Vietnam, and my job is the Vietnamese are wiring these barracks for the army troops. They have a few Vietnamese doing that. They have two Korean supervisors watching them. And I was supposed to watch the Koreans.
So you're supervising the Koreans who are supervising the Vietnamese who are doing the actual work.
Right. So anyway, I'm all taking it seriously and looking at the wiring to make sure it's right. And, you know, nothing wrong. And so finally, a guy walks up to me one day. Oh, and the Vietnamese are always trying to get my tools because they issued me tools, even though I never used them.
Yeah.
And so this guy who was in the army, he comes up. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm doing my job.
Because you were, like, inspecting.
Yeah, I'm making sure they're doing it right. I figured that was my job, you know.
Yeah.
And so I said, I'm doing my job. I'm supposed to watch these guys. He's like, you don't have to do that. And I'm like, I don't? And he's like, no. And I go, these Vietnamese want my tools. And he's like, give them to them. You're never going to use them. And then he's like, let's go hit the PXs. And I'm okay, so we went out shopping at the PX's and bought a fancy radio and such. And,
oh, man. That's funny.
But, I mean, it was just nothing. The job was nothing. It was pretty much doing nothing. And then, you know, when I finally left, get back here.
So you got a little taste of government work.
Yeah, right.
Government job.
Yeah, it was just like, where's the 16 hours of work? Where's the, you know, none of that. It's like I was like some celebrity, and you go to the club every night, and the club was like right on the ocean. It was in Chulai, and there's big picture windows and waves crashing.
It was like a resort.
I like a resort. Either the latest movie or the latest band, whatever, performing every night.
So American bands would actually come perform?
American, from Australia, from all over the place.
They would travel to Vietnam
they'd
and
travel
perform.
And they'd be performing.
Wow, yeah. That's crazy.
They'd be performing, and then if it wasn't that, it was like the latest movie that was out.
Wow.
Every night, entertainment. But had my own little room, you know, with a little Vietnamese maid and, you know, keeping the place clean. I was treated like a king. A friend of mine thinks I was in the CIA or something because the way it worked. I didn't go into a battalion like the CBs usually do. I was just on my own. Naval Support Activity Da Nang, then Naval Support Activity Chulai.
Yeah.
But it was like most people, if you hook up with a CBs today, they're like, what battalion were you in? And I'm like, I wasn't in a battalion. You know? It's
like, wow.
Crazy.
So going back to that era, the 1960s and stuff, do you have any good soul-winning stories from Faith Baptist? I know you knocked on some famous people's doors, right?
Yeah, we go out soul-winning a lot. And sometimes we'd go down to Oceanside by Camp Pendleton, a group of us, and all the Marines were hanging out in Oceanside. So we'd be just witnessing and approaching the Marines, you know, and got a lot of people saved. And where was I going with that?
But didn't you talk to Gilligan?
Oh, yeah. So we were in Topanga Canyon, which is kind of a celebrity type area at the time.
Yeah.
and knocked on the door of Bob Denver, who was Gilligan on Gilligan's Island. He was very nice, very polite. Got to go through the gospel with him and everything, but he was like, well, not now, but I'll think about it.
He listened to the whole thing.
He did listen to it. It was nice, very polite.
Maybe we'll get to heaven, and he's going to be up there with the skipper and professor and everybody.
Marianne. Yeah, hopefully.
The seed was planted. All right, so let's talk about life back then in L.A. in the 60s.
It was great. I mean, they called me Valley Boy before any of that Valley Girl ever came out and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was called... My parents moved me from the Valley when I was 15 to Camarillo, just north of there. And all my friends in Camarillo would always call me Valley Boy because I was always talking about the Valley, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was just a great time.
So didn't you say that things really kind of changed really fast from 1 year to the next? Like 1 year, nobody was smoking pot. People didn't even smoke. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, in my high school in Camarillo, before that I'd never run into drugs anywhere. And in the 10th grade, no drugs. People were drinking and such, but there was no drugs at all. In the end of the 11th grade, all of a sudden, this ex-girlfriend of mine went out with this Hell's Angel and came back to school and say, and he was smoking marijuana.
And everybody was just horrified.
Shocked, yeah.
Yeah.
By the end of, the 11th grade, the whole school was smoking pot.
And just to be clear, 11th grade, this is 1967, right?
Yeah, 67.
Yeah, because you were born in 1950.
Right. It just came on the scene. And it's just things changed. And people were doing anything to get high. I mean, they would drink bottles of cough syrup. They would blow gasoline, suck gasoline fumes out of their gas tank. I mean, it was just...
Banana peels?
This one guy had boiled the banana peels because of that song, Mellow Yellow.
Which was a hoax.
And then he acted like he was getting high, but...
It turned out
it didn't do anything to you.
It was a placebo.
Yeah.
Placebo.
Exactly.
So, didn't you say just by smoking cigarettes, you're just like a goody two-shoes? Because just everybody was smoking, right?
Yeah. When I first got to Camarillo, I'm like, well, it's a cool place. And they introduced me in class. I had to just go up there and register myself. My mom's like, go register at the high school. So these two girls are like, you're going to lunch with us. And I'm like, cool, So I go to lunch with them. We have lunch and everything. And they're like, now we're going to have a cigarette. And I'm like, well, I don't smoke. You don't smoke? What a soch, And they have these on the lawn below the lunch area. They have all these circles where people lay in circles and smoke. And there'd be smoke billowing out of the circles, but you couldn't actually see them smoking. And unless the teachers snuck up through the school
parking. So it's just a circle of kids and then smoke's coming out the middle,
basically. Yeah, smoke. And once in a while, the teachers would go out there and they'd say, you need to clean up all these cigarette butts and stuff,
But everybody's just smoking at school.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that today?
Oh, no.
Yeah. That would never happen, right?
And when you became a senior, you had a senior patio, with walls all around it.
Yeah.
So that, you just placed guards on those walls, and you could just sit there and have a cigarette. And
smoke's just billowing out.
You were totally
out.
Safe, yeah. Because they had to actually see you, But sometimes when you're in those circles, they'd try to sneak up through the student parking, which was right next to that lawn.
So try to catch you doing it?
Yeah, you'd have to be on guard all the time.
So didn't you say also that, this is the late 60s in California?
Right.
But didn't they read the Bible in school and pray, and they sent you to vacation Bible school and stuff?
Well, when I was in the probably fourth grade, they had a thing in elementary school called religious release. And they would send you to whatever church was set up to do it. If you were Baptist, you go to the Baptist. If you're Catholic, you go to the Catholic. So I would go to the Baptist church. And you go there for an hour, and they preach the gospel to you and told you Bible stories and everything. Then you'd go back to school. That's before they took the Bible.
So it was a religious emphasis week or something.
Right. It was every week. It was called religious release.
Oh, it was every week?
For one hour, a week.
Oh, wow. So it was 1 hour every week throughout the school year. You'd go to your religion and get religious training. If you're Baptist, you go to the Baptist. Methodist, you go to the Methodist. Whatever,
yeah.
Wow.
And so there was a Baptist church right down
the street. Didn't the teachers prayed and stuff? Or they
I don't really remember that.
You don't remember that?
No. But it was just a different world. I mean, they didn't have any of the weird stuff that goes on today, you know?
Yeah.
But how about the Manson?
Yeah, tell that one. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm like right before I went to Vietnam, I was probably 19 years old, just turned 19. So I go to look up this old girlfriend who I knew when I was 17. So I look her up, and somebody said she lives in this apartment, such and such address. And it was right off of Topanga Canyon Boulevard. So I go to her house, and all she can talk about is Charlie and the ranch, and we ride horses. And then she's like, let's go up there right now. We were like 2 miles from the Spahn Ranch where the Mansons hung out.
Yeah.
But you'd never heard of the Mansons at that point.
Yeah.
Because this is right before the murders. And she just said, Charlie and the ranch, and we ride horses. And I'm just like, why do I want to go there? She's in love with this guy named Charlie. Why would I take her up there? You know? So I'm just like, see you later. I'm gone.
Well, you didn't want to be the third wheel.
No.
Playing second fiddle exactly. to Charlie.
So a couple of years, 3-4 years later, I ran into this guy, and he was from the same area. I was living in Simi Valley at this point. And then he's like, we're talking about people we knew. And I go, I mentioned this girl's name, and he's like, you knew her? She was with the Mansons.
Wow.
And so I'm just like, wow, you know. And then I put it together, you know.
Who Charlie was.
Yeah. And then I'm just like, well, she was with the Mansons. If I'd have gone with her that day, I'd have gone up to the Spahn Ranch. Just like they made a movie recently called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And what is it? Brad Pitt's in it?
Yeah.
So Brad Pitt ends up picking up a Manson girl and taking her to the Spahn Ranch at that same time.
That would have been you.
Yeah, I know. That would have been
you. You were that guy.
But the same time period, the same thing, and he gets into all this trouble.
Okay, so another funny story. So when you first were going to go on a date with my mom,
right?
Didn't her dad, Lieutenant Dick Tackerberry, didn't he like force you to shave or something?
That was after we dated a few
times. Well,
tell
that story though.
Okay. So he was real picky, you know, if somebody came over there, you know, with long hair with her and her girlfriend or something. One time he made him put a bag over the guy's head before they would let his daughter go with them.
So that story was that basically he told them that my mom couldn't go out with them. You know, his daughter can't go out with them because this guy's too ugly.
Oh, okay.
He's too ugly. So then the friend Janet said, well, what if we put a bag over his head?
Right.
And then Dick said, yeah, if you put a bag exactly. over his head, it's fine. So then they actually like cut eyes and a mouth and
right.
put a bag over this
and
guy's
they drove
head.
Off.
And they drove off like that.
Yeah.
So, but tell your story, though.
So I go to pick her up one night, and I was like, I was starting to grow a beard. So probably had about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks growth. And she tries to just rush out the door without her dad seeing me, you know. And then he's like, wait a minute, I want to see his haircut, you know, because this guy, this guy was strict. When you got pulled over by one of the guys that worked for him on LAPD, they go, he lets you have those sideburns and stuff. You know? It's just... Anyway, so he's just like, he has me come in and he's like, oh no, you're not going out with her with that beard. You got two choices. You can leave here without her, or you can go in the bathroom. There's a razor in the bathroom and shave that beard off. So anyway, she's all ready to go. And I'm just like, I don't want to just like see, you know.
Yeah.
I felt bad for her, really. And so I went and shaved the beard off.
Well, if you hadn't shaved the beard, I wouldn't even be here.
No, maybe not. But then later I would ask him, you know, so well, I got a beard now. What are you going to do? And he's like, well, I can't do anything now, you know.
Well, and that was obvious. That was back, you know, he was unsaved. He was not right. a Christian. And didn't she try to tell her dad, like, but dad, he's a Christian.
Well, then throw him to the lions. That's what
he would
say.
Wow.
Yeah. He would say, oh, he's a Christian. Throw him to the lions.
Yeah.
So.
So are there any other, what else about that? I'm trying to think. Any other dick stories from back then?
One time we were going on a motorcycle ride, and the LAPD had a bike club called the Badgers. So there was us, Dick, and all his friends. There was about 10 vehicles, and I'm at the end of the group. So we come to this intersection out in, like, out of Lancaster or Palmdale.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a truck just blocking the right-hand lane to make a right turn, and we had to make a right turn. So everybody, all these cops are just going around this truck, and so I get up there, and so I go around the truck. Well, the highway patrol comes and pulls me over. So all these cops stop, and they come back, you know, and they're starting to give me, the highway patrol's starting to give me a ticket, and Dick's like, comes up with his badge. We're all LAPD here. We're all LAPD here. And he's like, yeah, but is he LAPD? And then he's like, it doesn't matter. We're all LAPD here. So then the guy wasn't backing off. So finally Dick had to take him aside and says, there's more of us here than there is of you. So you're going to back off. And he did. Oh, a lot of times I'd get into trouble. And then I'd say, my father-in-law is Lieutenant Tackerberry. And they're like, yeah, we know him. And he's going to hear about this.
But they let you off the hook.
But they would let me off, yeah. Shining a light on the police helicopter and stuff like that. But
oh, man.
Nowadays would be put in jail.
Yep. Those were the days.
Yep.
So, let's see. You were born in 1950.
Right.
Tell us about your allowance. How old were you at the time that you always immortalize about your allowance?
It started pretty young, but it didn't really go up much. It always was $1 a week.
Yeah, but $1 back then, you were giving me $1 in the 90s. Wow.
Inflation.
Deflation. So what'd you do with your dollar
allowance? Every Saturday, I'd get my allowance. I would go to the store, and I'd get 10 candy bars, which were like 5 cents each. I'd get a 29-cent bag of barbecue potato chips and an RC Cola, because they were the biggest ones. And spend my dollar and go home and just watch TV, munching down. And parents never said anything. Never said you're eating too much junk. Nothing. Just, you know. They didn't care.
Just
never said save your money, you know.
But didn't you buy baseball cards, but you threw the cards in the trash?
Oh, yeah. You'd buy baseball cards to get the gum. And then you just kind of look at the cards and throw them in the trash. And so you're throwing away Mickey Mantles and stuff, you know.
So you pretty much just bought it for the gum.
Yeah.
Kind of look at the cards. Oh, okay, cool. Throw them away.
Those are fun, yeah. But, I mean, I wasn't that into baseball, so I didn't really care. But looking back, you're throwing away valuable cards.
So when did you get your first motorcycle?
Well, my dad used to try to tempt me all the time to go to work with him. Because he'd say, you want to go to work with me today? And I go, not really. And he'd say, I'll pay you $5. And I'm like, I don't know. And maybe we'll go by the Honda shop. And then I go, okay, I'm on, you know. Because I was just, I had a mini bike, but I wanted a motorcycle. And so that happened several times. And then one day he said, let's go to the Honda shop, and bought me a Honda Super 90. And that was a great day in my life. Well, I ended up like within a year, I had 4 motorcycles in my bedroom.
Why'd you have 4 motorcycles?
Because, so my dad buys the 90 and says it's for both of us.
Uh-huh.
So then he never gets to ride it because I'm riding it constantly. So then he's like, I'm going to get a bigger motorcycle for myself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So then we bought this Honda 150, which was kind of an odd bike. And so, okay, Dad, now you got the Honda 90, I'll take the 150. Okay. So then he still is stuck on the Honda 90. So then he's like, I gotta get myself a bigger motorcycle. So then he finds a Honda 250 Scrambler, and then I'm like, Dad, that's my bike now. You take the Honda 150. And he was good with that, you know. And then later he bought a Honda 160, which was a cool bike.
Mm-hmm.
And the bedroom was like a 20x20 patio that they'd enclosed into a room. And so tile floor and stuff had plenty of room. So I had 4 motorcycles stacked in my bedroom, and I could just lay in bed and watch them, stare at them.
Pretty wild. Do you want to tell the story about the girl with the red hair?
Oh, okay. So I'm in high school, and I had this girlfriend, and I was really attracted to her because she had this beautiful red hair, you know, long red hair. So these Mexican guys in my class, they were always trying to harass me. And they go, you know that girlfriend of yours? And I'm like, yeah. That hair, that's not really her hair. And I'm like, you're crazy, you know. And so at that time, I was taking her to school and back from high school. So I go get in the car, and I'm like, is that your real hair? And she's like, yes. And I grabbed it and I pulled it off her head.
It was a wig.
Yeah, and it was a wig. So that was the end of that relationship.
Well, it was, you know, as cruel as that was, it was another one of those things that just had to happen in order for me to be born.
That's right, yeah.
So my existence was at stake.
Strange. And in those days, it was so cool because there were no cell phones. There was no way for a girl to get a hold of you. So when you got tired of a girl, you could dump her, you know? And then they'd never have any way to get a hold of you. And you disappear one day. I had this one girl. Every time I go to pick her up, it would take her about a half hour to get ready, you know, before she was ready to go. Just five more minutes. And one day I just got sick of it and I just drove off and never came back. It's about a year or two later, I see her, and she's like, Ray, what happened? What happened? I got tired of waiting for you. But there were no cell phones or any way for anybody to ever get a hold of you. Or
yep, it's a different time.
Yep, different world.
So are there any other interesting, like, Faith Baptist stories?
Let me think. This is the time Glenn Shunk was there. And
talk about it.
240 people saved. And it was like, he was just a great preacher, you know. And women that had unbeliever husbands would bring him to his meetings. And like when he had the thing on hell, that sermon, and they'd come out of there shaking. They were so...
They were just trembling.
Trembling.
Hearing the hell sermon.
Shaking, yeah.
Wow.
But,
well, that sermon's on YouTube. The Glenn Shunk, the yeah. Halls of Hell. There's actually like three versions of it on
he's
YouTube.
He's one of my favorite evangelists I've ever heard preach. I mean, you just look forward to hearing him every night. He'd be there for 2 weeks, like a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just...
Hundreds of people got saved.
Hundreds of people got saved and just... He was a great guy. And back then, you couldn't have a beard.
At church?
No. That was like
real strict.
Oh yeah, that was not. That was a sign of rebellion.
That's so weird because Jesus had a beard. And stuff.
Jack Hiles,
all the Bible guys had a beard.
Denny's sister Joan, her husband had a beard. Jack Hiles went up to him and said, "When are you going to shave that beard off?" You know, I mean, it's just
that's so weird.
No, it was like a sign of rebellion by the hippies.
But everybody in the Bible had a beard.
I know.
That's so
wild.
Nobody
looked at things logically back then. They had these rules, you know. And even a mustache was questionable. I shaved mine off for my wedding because I didn't want to offend the Pastor Rasmussen.
Didn't you just have a wedding in a living room, though?
Yeah.
You had a private wedding, right?
Yeah. Sue's parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was different times. And, yeah, people would say, never trust a man with a mustache, stuff like that.
So when you went into the Seabees, didn't they give you a choice of where you could be stationed or where you'd be trained or something?
Yeah, for some strange reason, I don't know why today, except it was the Lord working, is like you had three CB bases, Port Hueneme, California, Gulfport, Mississippi, or Davidsville, Rhode Island. So at the time, it's like, well, Davidsville, Rhode Island, I want to see the world.
Far away as possible.
Yeah, I don't even know why I did that. Well, what do they do? They send me to Point Magoo, California, 10 miles from my parents' house.
So, probably most people would have loved that assignment. California, like coming from elsewhere in the country.
So I'm in California, you know, and most of the other people there were not from California at Point Magoo. So, you know, they hated me because I was a smart aleck California kid, you know what I mean? So
weren't some of them just real hillbillies and stuff?
Oh.
Tell about them.
Well, in boot camp, you never imagined there were that many hillbillies in this world. And and do they not have schools in the South and such? I mean, this one guy that left with me, he was normal, okay? But he was a steel erector or something, built steel buildings.
Yeah, he's erecting steel buildings.
Erecting steel.
Yeah.
So we're in boot camp, and everybody's saying, what do you do, and what do you do? So this one little hillbilly from Alabama, he's like, what do you do? And he's like, erect steel. Build a steel? Well, I can build a steel, you know. It's just, there was only people that weren't hillbillies were like from Michigan, there was a guy, from Philadelphia, there was a guy. I mean, but anywhere in between. Or, you know, Hobbs, New Mexico, okay? Hillbilly, okay?
But, what was the guy you wrote a letter to his sister or something?
So this one guy who was from Georgia, total hillbilly, he shows me a picture of his sister. I'm like, wow, she's pretty cute. You know, can I write her a letter? And he's like, yeah. So I wrote her a letter, and I got back the most illiterate letter. She was supposed to be like 17 or something. The most illiterate letter is like a 2-year-old had written it. I'm not exaggerating. I wish I'd have kept that letter to this day, you know. But I'm like, do they not have schools? Did they not have to attend school? You know?
Oh, man. Oh, man, I just had something on the tip of my tongue about the, what was it? Oh, yeah, so, you know, we were talking earlier about how, like, around 1967 is kind of when everything changed, where everybody started smoking pot.
Right.
Everybody started growing their hair long and everything.
Right.
But didn't you tell a story that, like, maybe around 1966 or 67, right before that happened?
Right.
You were at a concert.
Right.
And there was a guy.
Well, it wasn't really cool like they portray it, that everybody had long hair. Only a few hippies and such.
And, like, musicians.
And musicians, yeah.
Yeah.
And but we went to a concert at Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. And, I mean, there was...
what year do you think it was?
Probably 67.
Uh-huh.
Maybe early 68. But anyway, there was this guy with long hair, and he went down in front of the stage where the bands were playing and was dancing around in a provocative way. And he was a guy with long hair. A bunch of people went down there and just beat the crap out of him. You know what I mean? They didn't tolerate that. Even unbelievers, they didn't tolerate it. They're just like, that guy's a fag, you know? Yeah.
So but because you said that people didn't really grow long hair until like
that
pretty
didn't
much
start
the
70s. Then they started letting it grow over their ears and stuff.
It was only like celebrities in the late 60s.
Yeah, but everybody had like put it over their ears and they go to the
And you were in
style.
LA.
Yeah.
So you're at the cultural center.
Yeah. But I never did, so everybody thought, are you a cop or whatever, you know?
Oh, they thought you were like an undercover cop?
Yeah, if you didn't have it over your ears, they thought you were a cop or something. But I had sideburns and. Yeah. When I got pulled over by one of Dick's friends, I was like, he lets you wear those sideburns?
That's funny.
Well, I don't work for him, you know?
That's funny.
But it was some crazy times. It was a great time. Gas was 25 cents a gallon everywhere.
Man.
You know? You didn't even think about what kind of mileage your car got. You didn't care, you know?
25 cents a gallon.
Everything was so cheap, you know? It's just unbelievable.
So what about, like, restaurants, stores? What do you remember?
Oh, the restaurants. I mean, Bob's Big Boy was 55 cents for a Big Boy hamburger, you know. And Bob's Big Boy was the place. Now they're rare and hard to find.
Just went out of business, you said, right? The one.
Yeah, it's just... But everything was very cheap. I mean, you get a whole meal and feed the whole family for a couple of dollars at McDonald's. And, you know, it was... It was great times. Then we had horses for a while. We got into that. My dad had like 21 horses. He was renting horses to celebrities and stuff. And they'd come out and take their kids horseback riding.
Wow.
And there was a famous story my dad always liked to tell. We went on a horseback ride and we went through somebody's ranch, you know, to get to where we wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So all these cops are after us. And we're up in the mountains riding our horses above this road in Agora.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's down there in a car saying, don't come back, don't come back, because all these cops were there. So my dad always called that the day we were running from the posse. And, stuff.
And grandma's like signaling you not to come back.
Don't come back, don't come down here, you know.
That's funny.
So then we waited until everything died down and we came out of the mountains.
You still got a warrant for you.
Just had treks, like my dad would take me boating out in the ocean. Be in storms, waves crashing over the boat, you know. Think you're never going to get out of there. And one time we were coming back from Catalina Island at night, waves crashing over the boat spinning in circles. And I looked up at my dad, I was probably 7 or 8, and I just said, Dad, we've had it. And he's like, no, we haven't. You know. So anyway, he turned the boat around and went back to Catalina, and then we avoided the storm. But I was calm. I mean, I was just like...
You're just like, this is it, Dad.
Dad, we've had it.
Oh, man, that's
some crazy times out on the ocean. Yeah. My dad was into everything. It was not a boring life. if it wasn't boating, it was water skiing, it was, you know, camping all the time, and, you know, quite a few adventures.
You got to do a lot of exciting stuff growing up, huh?
Yep.
Cool. All right, well, I think we might wrap it up unless you got anything else. I'm trying to think. I think we've covered a lot of the main stories from that era. Right,
John?
You. Is he even telling you the stories, John?
Huh?
No, let's not bring that. Some stories are better left untold.
I'm going to want to hear this one. We'll drop the air, though. That's a good one.
Some stories are better off the air, son, okay?
Right.
All right, okay. Cool. Well, thanks for doing this, Dad.
You're welcome.